everybody. Fantastic episode of the show today. We discussed Sam Bankman-Fried of FTX infamy's sentencing to 25 years in Manhattan federal court yesterday. Nick and I were present for that in Manhattan. It was pretty wild, so we kind of recount the experience. We also talk about some stuff on Bitcoin ordinals. We talk about the most profitable mints of the year so far, and we are joined by a very special guest, TA YouTuber extraordinaire Eric Crown, also known as Crypto Crown. He's a phenomenal guest. We have a lot of fun with him, both doing deep discussion and also having fun with the commenters. Anyway, it was a great episode of the show. Hope you enjoy it. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Friday, March 29th, the hangman has come for Sam Bankman-Fried. He was sentenced to 25 years yesterday. We are going to discuss that. Me and Nick were present in the overflow room at Manhattan Federal Court. Interesting experience for sure. I hope Nick is able to join video to kind of discuss what went down yesterday. I want to hear his take in addition to mine. A lot to discuss today. We're going to be talking about the Ink Mint on Ordinals, INK, Clemente Ink Mint on Ordinals, which has been one of the most profitable mints of the year so far. We're going to talk about Machi Big Brother, a polarizing figure, and his pre-sale as it is expected to launch imminently after raising over $40 million. And halfway through the show, we're going to be joined by a very special guest, a guest that's never been on the show before that I'm very excited about, Eric Crown. Crypto Crown, to discuss all things crypto price action in 2024. You know we're going to be talking to him about Bitcoin too. And you know I'm going to ask him some questions about his boxing match in Dubai that he had a few months back through Crypto Fight Night, where he fought a gentleman who I believe goes by Trading Lord. Gotta love these crypto influencer names. But anyway, a quick shout out. Someone DM'd me yesterday. I wanted to show him some love. If you're in New York next week for NFT NYC, there is an organized Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu open mat for NFT NYC. So you all can choke each other out if you're in town. Hopefully you actually train, so it's not just flopping around on the mats. April 4th, 3 p.m. to 4 p.m., 264 Canal Street, Unit 2W. This is Sensei Presents, the NFT NYC Jiu-Jitsu Open Mat. You know I'm a big martial arts guy. I want to show some love for the martial arts community. They DM me. I can't make it. If I went there, I would just choke everybody out immediately. There'd be arm bars everywhere, triangles everywhere. But of course, that's the day of our event, so I'm going to have my hands full, needless to say.
You're completely drawn to homoerotic events. I know that that's something that you're like really into, dude. And rolling around with a bunch of guys, quote, choking them out while you kiss them. That's the type of thing that Pio's into. So yeah, I mean, I love that about you, man.
Wow, I'm used to Nick interrupting. I can't say I saw that interruption coming. That was a pretty good one, Nick. I appreciate it. But yeah, check it out for sure, ladies and gentlemen. That's the day of our event. It also happens to be the day of Easy's basketball game event thing. It also happens to be the day of Nick's speech or discussion at NFT NYC. I literally thought it was a mistake when our filmmaker sent me a screenshot. He's like, yeah, so you need me for 10 hours that day. I was like, what? All this shit is on the same day? I did not realize that. But yeah, it is. So interesting. Anyway, Nick, if you could hop on video, that'd be fantastic, because I want to talk about...
Hey, Pio, I'll get to that in a second, dude. Really appreciate it. But let's keep fantasizing about men on mats, all right?
Sounds good. Look, yesterday was the SBF sentencing, right? Sam Bankman-Fried sentenced to 25 years. We're going to get into the weather report right after this, but this is kind of like the pre-weather report story. Pretty wild stuff. We were in the overflow room. Everyone's just kind of, joking around. Everyone's sitting there. There's a guy from Fortune magazine saying to Nick, like, hey, I wanted to, you know, do a story on you. And Nick was like, yeah, I didn't text you back. And I was like, yeah, that's the least surprising thing I've ever heard. Nick doesn't text anybody back. The guy basically pinned Nick down to give him his phone number. Everybody's, kind of chilling in the overflow room. And then all of a sudden, the whole room goes dead silent. And I'm like, oh, what happened? And you look at the screen, and SBF walks out. Dude is not in a suit, right? Because he's been at that jail. He's in jail attire. He's in jail garb. And it's just dead silent. It's like pretty damn intense. And, he sits down, and then they start going through stuff. And it was fascinating. SBF talked for like 10 minutes. And Nick literally nudged me and whispered during the 10 minutes. And Nick was like, he's not helping himself. And that irked these two girls in front of us. It's pretty funny. Like, Nick pisses people off in a variety of environments.
I don't know that it pissed anybody off, dude. Who was sitting next to us?
Carly, who's very nice. Really enjoyed hanging out with Carly for a little bit. Carly from Overpriced JPEGs, I believe is the name of her periodical.
No, it's now just the Carly Riley Show. But you wouldn't know that because you don't pay attention to anything on the internet other than fighting and men rolling around in mats kissing each other. So the in terms of, no, Carly was like, oh, yeah, that's actually completely what she was like. Yeah, I completely agree.
What wasn't helping?
I wasn't saying Carly was mad. Carly's cool.
When you say it wasn't helping his case, like, why? Like, what? Because, like, what was he saying that was kind of viewed as, like, negative?
He showed, as the judge said, no remorse. He was just talking about the team members who he's kind of like dwelling in the past, and he like over exaggerates his impact on like society. Like, he has an inflated sense of self. Yeah. Which he like demonstrated throughout the entire case. Like, the guy was talking about how he's autistic, the judge. But it's not just autism that he's suffering from. He's suffering from narcissism. He's suffering from just a lot of different things, but definitively an overinflated sense of self. And so he spent literally 7 minutes praising everybody who helped in the process, recounting every moment. None of that talk involved, yo, this was a complete disaster and I like this was a mistake and I feel absolutely awful about this and I've been doing everything I can and will continue to do everything I can to, you know, support efforts to help recuperate. He can't do anything at this point in jail. And the bankruptcy proceeding is the main thing. And there was also some guy who came up who was
English guy,
a witness or sorry, what is it?
A victim. An affected victim.
And he did the victims no justice either.
Like, that guy sucked.
He was just bad. So like basically the judge
cut him off and was like, I think it would be beneficial for you to wrap up. Yeah. I love the way judges and legal people speak. If anything, I wish I could just speak that way all the time. It's so like beautifully formal because I feel like everything they say is going to make its way into an article or something. So you have to kind of speak in a certain way so that it reads well on paper. And the judge was pretty funny, man. Yeah, he told that guy to basically shut the F up.
That was the case the entire court trial. Throughout the trial, he was always giving funny quips and essentially telling people to shut the heck up. Regardless, the victims in this case are going to get their money back. They're going to miss out on the gains. And that's what he was discussing. Apparently there was some emotional trauma. He claimed there were two suicides as a result of it, which is devastating if that's actually the case. But aside from that, it was like, kind of like, woe is me. And it's kind of difficult to hear. This is different than like a bank run and like regular people being impacted. These are people speculating on crypto assets who lost their money. So like, it's hard to have as much sympathy, despite the fact that it is traumatic for people. It is interesting also watching this cycle. I see my timeline is now filled with way more losses than it is gains of people just like venting about, oh man, I lost money on this trade. Like Thread guy posting about how he lost $100,000 or something like that.
Yeah, crypto valleys. I mean, to be honest with you, I'm not terribly surprised. Like, you got to think, last week we put $62 million into Solana pre-sales. This week we just put $40 million into a pre-sale. Binance in the BNB chain had $220 million into a pre-sale. Like, that amount of liquidity is not small. And we're seeing Bitcoin ETF outflows versus inflows, which is not unsurprising. We just saw the Munchables hack for $62 million. This all happened within like 7 days. So you've seen basically a lot of liquidity either get locked up or lost right now. So seeing these losses start to occur is not the most surprising thing. Like, it almost feels like it was bound to happen when you have a ton of outflows from the overall ecosystem. And like, dude, I'm down on Crypto Valleys. Like, I was playing the shit out of it. I still am. And I bought the top. Bought, like, not Pico top, but pretty damn close. Pretty damn close.
Nobody asked anybody to buy Crypto Valleys. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you do that, it's your responsibility. And obviously, you know that easy, of 100%. Course.
100%. And I was like, I even said, like, I lost a bunch of money on DeFi Kingdoms, so why am I not going to do it again? Like, I was poking fun at myself about it. And then I've just been complaining about rolling potatoes the whole time, which is, like, the least common or the most common asset. So, like, I'm poking fun at the fact I'm just burning money on this stupid thing. But, like, it's also, like, the quote, blur or blast farming. Which is
you
going
got
on with
D's joking about sucking off a shotgun.
Well, D's, I've watched D's spend $250,000 a day on literally seed gotchas, like a gotcha machine for seeds every single day for a week and a half. Like, at some point, it's like, holy shit.
Okay, well, anyway, look, we're going to get to the weather report in just 1 second. Last thing about the trial, and Nick, let me know what you think of this. One of the most interesting quotes, I think, was after SBF's lawyer spoke and after SBF spoke, the judge, the no-nonsense judge, as they're labeling him, he said, let me put this in the layman's terms or colloquial terms, he said. He said, if a thief stole a bunch of money and then went to Vegas and wins at the casino, that doesn't absolve him of his theft. And I was like, oh, let's go, judge. That's like a pretty hard line right there, you know?
Pia, you're like surprised that a judge of 30 years was commentating
spitting
on
bars
subject matters. Basically, he's like, oh shit, he's dropping law bars.
I like law bars, man. They were very interesting. SBF's lawyer tried to drop a bar too, and it got referenced by the prosecutor. Nick, I don't know if you remember exactly what it was. It was like he doesn't something he does it with math in his brain. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
But are you talking about his lawyer or the
SBF's lawyer in that final whatever you call it, I guess, statement?
And that was used against them. Basically, that everything is processed in like expected values and things like that without emotion, essentially.
But it was a one-liner that was like, he doesn't do it with emotions from his heart. He does it with mathematics in his brain. And then the prosecutor was like, yeah. So in other words, he's saying that if the math worked, he'd do it again.
Well, and yeah, that was a quote that was used from the news. The judge ended up essentially quoting his own interviews, which everyone was like, this seems like a bad idea.
Oh, I nudged you during that. That was one of the last things when the judge quoted right before the sentencing.
Exactly what I was just saying. No, go ahead, please. No, go ahead.
I don't feel like you made it clear enough, Nick.
I was in the process of literally describing it, but no, please.
No, you go.
I would like
everyone wants to hear from Choose Rich Nick. Go ahead, Nick. Go ahead.
Oh, geez. Wow.
I thought that was funny.
Choose poor Pio over here. Bring it on up there. There you go.
No, I want you to go.
Okay, I'm going. Anyways, I don't even know what the hell we were talking about at this point. So maybe you actually can't explain
it. That's why I stepped in. I thought this was going to happen. That's what I'm talking about.
I remember. Okay. So he basically was talking to the press after, as we all recall, after he had broken the law, basically. And essentially what happened was the judge just quoted those things to be like, there's an example where he basically was asked by journalists about if you could flip a coin and the whole world would end, but there was an 80% chance of quadrupling, having a 4x impact on humanity or something, he'd flip the coin. And the judge was just using all these different like quotables as examples in which he told the press. And the reality is like, I think the judge had a good read on SBF. The guy is just so, every time he talks, it's just like he loves an audience, but it's like boring as hell. And he just sent like, it's, they talked about how great at marketing he is, was something the judge said, which I felt was like a really generous thing.
Great. He just paid a bunch of people a ton of money. That was it.
He was great at marketing. He built an enormous brand. I know what you mean, Nick. I don't think he would be good at, he's not going to be on SNL, but he was good at like corporate marketing, I suppose you could say.
The business that they built was effectively marketed, I will say. Yeah. But that's also, this space responds positively to idiots, basically. Like, they're like looking for or like overly complicated messaging, and basically people that sound smart is the way that I would describe it.
Yeah,
like when people are talking about like perps and these other things that people are trading.
Pac-Man.
Pac-Man, I think, is actually.
Oh, I do too. But I mean,
he doesn't deliver it in like a convoluted way. But SBF got well known for his kimchi trade.
Kimchi trade.
Not offensive at all.
Yeah.
One thing I was really surprised about was the sentence would be reduced to half for good behavior. So he'd come out after 12 and a half years, which I thought was really strange, because normally, like, say you go in for doing something heinous, like murder, aggravated assault. You would hope that this person would have a character change over 12 years and would get out for good behavior. But this guy is all about his mind and how he works. So I'm like, what? So he just has to like tutor people in jail, and that's considered good behavior, because he's not going to beat anyone up. So what is good behavior in prison to get your sentence reduced to 12 and a half years? And it's not like, I think he'll want to, you know, be a target in prison. Like, clearly not. He's not the big guy on the playground who's the bully. So I was kind of surprised that perhaps 12 and a half years he could walk out and he wouldn't have to serve the full term.
So the Fortune guys seem to think that it's 80% that is the minimum sentence for federal crimes. So you can only get a 20% reduction. So he has to serve at least 20 years, according to that guy. Now, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not 100% certain about it. There was also a lot of people that I spoke to had sort of like a somber feeling about the trial, as much as there's the entertaining side of what's going on. And our content, for example, had a sort of joke spin to it, because obviously, like, everyone's publishing the exact same story. There were people that I spoke with that were just like, I don't know. It's like, it's not as extreme as wishing death upon somebody, but like it's like, I think a lot of people were like, yeah, I mean, this guy's going to jail for like however many years. And like, I don't know. There people have mixed emotions about like what went on here.
I felt weird. I felt pretty weird being there, and throughout the day afterwards, like, there were moments I felt weird. It's pretty sad. I mean, the guy was like, he was in a position to be something actually special, and he really fucked it up, like really, really, really bad. And now he's going to go to jail for 25 years. And if you start to do the whole like empathizing with him, and you picture your, like, that's rough, man. Being in prison for 25 years, being locked in a box is rough.
That's why I said he wasn't doing himself any favors, though. Like, literally, but maybe that has to do with the autism. Maybe that's like what the source of his inability to sort of empathize in any sort of way. But I think there's like a lot, like, I don't know that autism is a sign of inability to have empathy. It's literally more about like reading social cues and things like that. If you're a sociopath, then that's like a different thing, right? And that's like an inability to have emotion associated with these things. So I just feel like there's other weird things that he has going on, and his inability to show remorse associated with it, it seemed so insincere, and it was embedded with other things which had to demonstrate something completely unrelated to him. And it was just like, who the fuck let you spew this bullshit? Like, did the lawyers say, yeah, Sam, this is a good idea? He always ignored all of the advice of all of his counsel. I mean, we saw that from the moment that he spoke to the press. We saw that during the trial when he decided to go on the stand and didn't do any favors to himself. We then saw it culminate at his own sentencing when he's literally not able to communicate anything that develops any, like, he wasn't able to generate any sense of empathy. And for a moment, up until he was speaking at his trial and before the defense came up, the prosecution came up, I was like, you know what? I think this defense did a decent job. Like, I remember hearing it and being like, wow, I feel like they really did a great job explaining this thing. And then he decided to go like on the stand and fuck it all up. And then additionally, the prosecution just came in and leveraged everything that he had said to be like, yeah, dude, what the hell are you talking about? So it was a complete, I don't know, like there's part of me that as sad as it seems and as simple as it was for him to just not screw things up and become a billionaire, he did decide to like participate in legitimately criminal activity and then follow that without any remorse. And there was a narrative, I'm gonna wrap this, which was like, he had the ability to show something where what felt like a progressive sequence of missteps, where the, you know, they made one small thing, which wasn't like, it was in a gray area, you know, like they made one decision in order to cover their backs. And then that spiraled into an actual crime. And there's an explanation there, which is like, I'm gonna be honest, you know, I didn't go in there with the intention to do this thing, but I eventually got to a place where we were doing things that I couldn't even believe that we were doing. And I deeply regret that. If there's a lesson learned, it's like, you know, something about, you know, small immoral acts can actually accrue to some, you know, significant act, which in this case took down our entire company. And I regret every minute of it, basically. Like, he could have just come out and said something about that. They just didn't spin that story. And he just kept digging himself a ditch every single time he opened his mouth, including yesterday. And that's where it ended up. And I was like, all right, yeah. I mean, I felt bad for a hot second before he started talking. And I was like, bro, just wrap it up.
Yeah.
That bad. Like, him speaking was genuinely that bad.
No, you've heard him speak easy. Like, it's whatever you heard.
I'm just surprised that it was like, they gave him first 10 minutes on the stand. And then the general consensus here is like, oh, he just kept fucking up.
You've heard him speak before. He speaks the same way every time. He's completely out to lunch. He's literally a criminal that just got sentenced to 25 years in prison. So yeah, he's pretty out to lunch. I'm just saying, like, that's not normal. That doesn't happen all the time. When I say I feel bad, it's not like empathizing for him. It's just like, it's just a lousy situation in general. I'm not saying he deserved any less. In fact, I genuinely think he deserved more, because I do think the moment he gets out, he'll be back into the crypto scam game. But 20 years, who knows where the industry's at? Well, I don't know what it's going to be about at that point. Also, don't know how
I can be able to catch it. Dude, if we're 20 years out and you can still launch an exchange and like, and gain significant traction, like, you can't, there's someone, Eric Ries is the guy who created the Lean Startup and wrote the book on it. And he has a business called LTSE, Long-Term Stock Exchange. And the entire thesis there was like, hey, we're not going to do quarterly reporting. And because that's creating misincentives for businesses to focus on short-term objectives versus long-term objectives. And so he has this whole thesis that's been under development for a very long time. There's a couple of stocks that are part of it. It does exist at this point in time, but it is so difficult. Like, no one has any idea that exchange exists. And like, good luck competing with NASDAQ and S&P and Dow Jones right now. Like, you just can't go and just like do that. Whereas like before, When SBF and his business partner, Gary, ended up building out the first version of FTX, I mean, you're dealing with like Mount Gox sort of stuff.
Different playing field, not even comparable. It's almost like if you said you're going to start the NBA today, it's like, okay, good luck, buddy. You got to compete with the fucking NBA. Anyway, look, we're going to dive into this weather report quickly. And then we have a very special guest, Crypto Crown, Eric Crown. He's in the waiting room. We're going to let him on in just a moment. Very excited. Very, very excited for Eric to join the show. Sig, please take it away.
Yeah. I'll just say that just one last point. Even though Sam is, you know, when he speaks, you don't empathize with him at all. I would say this, if I was going to be on trial for 25 years, potentially longer, even if I was the worst speaker in the world, I would have to go up on that stand just so I could rest at the end of my life, knowing I tried to defend myself. Even if defending myself was the worst thing I could do. Because if you don't try, imagine the sleepless nights you've had when you're just like, I didn't tell my point of view, even if that point of view comes across as really bad. So that would be my explanation for maybe why Sam felt like he wanted to go up, even if he's a character who wants the audience.
But couldn't he have like given it to a therapist or someone who like who's at least capable of being like, yo, here's how this is going to come across emotionally, right? Like, I feel like he's smart enough that I feel like he could have figured out a way to deliver that. But he's still one of the most important things is self-awareness.
Yeah.
And even if you're not capable on your average communication due to disabilities or something like that, or whatever condition that you're born with, he's smart enough to understand that he has advisors that are available that he could get, even though he's now broke. But like, there's somebody that I'm certain he could have reached out to say, hey man, you know, I'm facing up to 150 years here. Can you give this a once over? He just like winged it is what it felt like. And I'm just like, what the fuck is going on, dude?
Real quick, Nick, you brought up sociopath. People are calling Andrew Huberman a sociopath right now. Like, someone told me yesterday, like, he's a sociopath for having 6 girlfriends at the same time when he's 48 years old and lying to them about each other and not going to Thanksgiving when he said that he would, which maybe he is a sociopath. That is a big thing to do, is like just holding down 6 girlfriends at the same time at 48 years old. If that dude's a sociopath, the dude that gambled $8 billion of company money just to save his other business that didn't really matter that much, Alameda Research, is probably a sociopath. Anyway, Sig, please.
Yeah, let's get into that weather report, folks. It is Friday, March the 29th. At ETH market volume is coming at 26 million. Solana market volume in at almost 15. Onto the market leaders, the ETH NFT market is just red. It's blood everywhere. You got Clonex down to 0.47. Mutants down to 2.2, heading in the direction of Easy's bet. Milady's down to 3.6 ETH. Over on Solana is looking better at the little potatoes. They're rebounded back up to 1.6 sold. Parcel also back up on its news of its tokenomics. And Saga Monkeys, however, they are down to 3.2 sol. Over on Bitcoin, most collections are also in the red as liquidity has now moved to yesterday's mint, which is the Ink PFP, with Bitcoin puppets, they're down to 0.249. Node Monkeys, they're also down to 0.53. And Quantum Cats, they're down to 0.258 BTC. Over the past 24 hours, well, the big stories are, first of all, obviously Sam Bankman-Fried. He got 25 years in prison. We've spoken about it, so I'm just going to sort of skip over that one. Secondly, over on Bitcoin, the Anime PFP Ink minted out yesterday, and it's been the winner of the day after taking over on Ordinals. The collection has landed number one on the 7-day volume chart after just 12 hours and has done 250 BTC in volume at 17.5 million so far, and it's sitting at a floor of 0.078, and it's set to reveal later today. Over on the token side of things, Wormhole has announced on Wednesday, the 3rd of April, is going to be the launch date of the W token, with 82% of the 10 billion supply to be unlocked initially, with the remaining vesting over 4 years. The token is currently trading at $1.6 each in the pre-market. And lastly, Memecoin WIF hit a new all-time high yesterday, breaking over the 4 billion market cap and overtaking Pepe to sit below Doge and Shiba in terms of meme coin market cap. It has since retraced to 3.7 billion, which is still up 17% over the last 24 hours. That is all for the weather report, folks. It is back to you folks in the studio.
Fantastic weather report as usual, Signal. The audience is asking why Little Potatoes had a market update. I'm going to go ahead and point a finger at Clemente for that one.
Wasn't me. Mm-hmm. Hey, but shout out to Little Potatoes. They're up 3x in the last week. Oh, let's go.
Anyway, some updates from the Daily Bone, and then we will be joined by Crypto Crown, Eric Crown, very special guest, very excited to have him on the show. Let's go ahead and say Solana Real Estate NFT Parcel has announced the tokenomics for their parcel token with 36% allocated to the community, including 1% for Mad Lad holders who can claim a holder role in the Parcel Discord. Nick, we're going to need to do that. Mocha has announced the launch of their community sale for the Mocha token with the deadline to take action by April 11th. So more deadlines here in crypto. And last but not least, over a month after minting the PFP and raising 1850 Ethereum through a primary sale, the anime profile picture collection Persona, I don't know if you remember this one from about a month ago, is expected to reveal today. The floor currently sits at 0.32, pretty strong floor. Easy. Do you think that this will have a post-reveal pump?
No. And I like the project. I like the art, but no. Like, dude, you took a month. You had all the hype in the world for this project to cook. If they dropped the reveal 48 hours after mint, this thing would have cooked. I think the art is sick, but my God, dude, like, what are you doing here?
Like, fair enough.
Took a month.
Hey, not wrong. Fair enough. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we are joined by crypto YouTuber extraordinaire. We've hung out with this guy on a now funked show that we did with Elio Trades on Twitter Spaces. Never had him on this show before. Big time YouTube following. This is Crypto Crown, Eric Crown, technical analysis extraordinaire, and someone that has competed in a sanctioned boxing match in Dubai. How many of you can say that you've done that? Welcome to the show, buddy.
Hey man, it's really good to be here. I've been a secret admirer of this show for a long time now, so it's good to be actually in the show, which is super cool for me. So thanks for having me on.
Epic man, thanks for joining. So look, we like to start really broad. I'd love to know, what do you make of where we're at in this crypto cycle? Or Nick, do you have a question here?
Real quick, what's going on inside of that computer right there? Is like, is that like a time machine, or like what's the situation there?
I would have expected you to know that my computer is in the process of getting rich itself. It's as you see all of those lights coming in, that's more and more electrons, which equals computer money. Yes, indeed.
Okay, so money is transmitting into the purple orifice that's sitting right there. Interesting.
Yes, and you don't even want to know what it's going to look like after this show.
So Eric, you know, when we look at where we're at in the market, we were at dinner with someone that works in wealth management a couple nights ago, and he pointed out that the kind of meme coin component to this bull run that happened over the past couple of weeks is a top signal of sorts. At the same time, you know, we're 90 or 115 days, something like that, you know, post Bitcoin ETF, very, very, you know, significant moment in crypto history, TradFi having easy access to Bitcoin, crazy inflows, but, you know, basically the most bullish scenario we could have imagined when you kind of look at the inflows. Bitcoin halving hasn't even happened yet. I'd love to know what you think of where we're at in the market, and then we'll kind of dive deeper.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing. So I come from traditional markets as well, and that is a sort of knowledge that you have, you know, from there, is that the junk rallies last typically. But I don't think that's the case with cryptocurrencies. It's not what we saw last cycle, and I don't believe that's what we're seeing this cycle as well. I mean, with Bitcoin basically closing already on new all-time highs for the monthly on CME, that's significant. I don't think things are stopping long-term. I think that there's still going to be, you know, more upside probably into the end of the year. And then, you know, who knows what happens into 2025 and 2026. But ultimately with Bitcoin, you know, I think it's going to generally lead the market. And as long as Bitcoin looks good, I expect everything else to kind of, you know, rise up with it.
And obviously, you're a big Bitcoin guy. I remember discussing that on the show with Elio Trades. You weren't a big NFT guy at that time. I'm a huge Bitcoin guy. Are there any other majors in crypto that you find particularly interesting here?
I mean, here's the thing, man. I'm just looking at charts. Like, I'm not really qualified to be looking at the fundamentals or anything like that. So, you know, I just look at a chart and I see, okay, does this look good or not? And for me, the big three now is it's not Litecoin, Ethereum, and Bitcoin. Or at least that's what it was when I came into this market in like 2016, 2017. You guys probably remember. But now I think it's Solana, Ethereum, and Bitcoin. And those are the big ones that I think, you know, probably have some longevity. And those are the ones that like I might be okay with holding, you know, more long term. But just because, you know, I'm not holding something doesn't mean that it might not be legitimate. It's just I don't have the time to be going through and figuring out like if fucking dog with hat is going to be the next, you know, world reserve currency. I don't know.
Sure, sure. And you referenced, you know, coming in 2016. So you've seen three cycles at this point. You know, I was having a discussion with someone who the claim that he made was, if Bitcoin breaks new all-time high before the halving, then the previous kind of cycle structure is invalidated, right? And that did happen. What's your opinion on that? Do you think we're still married to this Bitcoin halving cycle? Or now that we have Bitcoin ETFs, that we might have an Ethereum ETF, do you think that that's been invalidated and we're just kind of in a whole new world?
Yeah, man, it's a really good question. So I do think that the four-year model is breaking. What replaces it? We don't know, because we, you know, time will tell, of course. So with Bitcoin breaking its prior all-time high before the halving, I think that's significant, and just kind of have to be more open-minded as things, you know, go on from here. So it's, you know, was that spurned upon by the ETF? You know, obviously that plays a part of it, but ultimately, when price tells you that some news going on, like a very specific characteristic like that, I think it's time to listen. And I think a lot of people right now are trying to fit all of the current price action into that four-year model, rather than kind of, you know, understanding or at least being accepting that this seems to me like it's over.
Absolutely. And so you brought up the ETFs, I want to talk about that. And then I want to talk about last cycle, because I think there's a lot of unique properties of last cycle. But with the ETFs, I mean, this changes things a lot, I have to think, considering, you know, we used to celebrate Michael Saylor buys previous cycle that were to the tune of, you know, hundreds of millions, like, oh my goodness, a publicly traded company is, you know, buying hundreds of millions of dollars of Bitcoin. This is crazy. The ETFs have, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of inflows every single day now, right? So you have to think that that changes things. And if that continues and there's more traditional finance adoption, wouldn't you think that there might be a kind of more stable floor to Bitcoin, so to speak?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a more stable floor with Bitcoin. I think that moves both to the upside and the downside are going to be less percentage-wise. I think, you know, one of the things that's very attractive, at least for myself coming into this sector, was, you know, the volatility of it. Because with that volatility, you can, you know, you can produce some pretty big gains. Of course, also some massive losses too. But with that in mind, I do think that these sort of days, as this market matures, are going to naturally go by the wayside. And, you know, we shouldn't really expect as big of a move to the upside nor the downside, you know, from here on out. You know, and that's just part of the game of a maturing asset. Over time, we're probably going to see Bitcoin move similar to like the major ETFs that you see in traditional markets, which, you know, a 1% day in those markets is like a humongous day, whereas a 1% day, you know, is just a normal Monday. I mean, shit, even that's like a slow Monday. So I think, you know, getting prepared for just the boringness of this market to come. Obviously, altcoins going to be different, but Bitcoin, you know, is going to be more and more boring as these next years progress.
Absolutely, makes sense. And, you know, Nick, if you have any technical questions, we can definitely get to those. One thing I want to ask about last cycle, Eric, is, you know, when you look at last cycle, the kind of multiples on the all-time high on Bitcoin were a little underwhelming. I think a lot of people expected Bitcoin to break 100,000 last cycle. And I've heard a lot of people talk about the kind of leverage in the market and the bad actors having some level of responsibility for that. We talked about Sam Bankman-Fried and FTX today. You know, obviously, Three Arrows Capital comes to mind, Celsius, BlockFi was a bad actor, but it still didn't work out. Genesis Lending, all of these entities, which Do Kwon, right, with Luna, all these people like in jail right now or on the run. Do you think that that played in the last cycle? Were you expecting a higher, you know, all-time high? And do you think that we're kind of running free now?
I'm sorry. I'm just looking at some of the comments here and they're so good. Like the casting couch in the background. I used to have a nice casting couch myself, man. Yes, it was very, very good. But yeah, as far as, you know, the price and whatnot. So in last cycle, you know, did I expect things to go higher? Kind of. But ultimately, once price turned around, once we started to get that weekly downtrend, you know, that was just a dream at that point. So for me, it's all about the trend. The trend is number one. Even in the most like complex mathematical formulas of how to price, you know, assets, trend is always a component. And it's always like the big thread that holds everything through. So for me, you know, as long as the trend remains the upside here, I'm very open-minded with how high things can go. I do think that we're probably going to see above $100,000. We're probably not going to see, you know, above like $200,000. I know that's like a crazy statement, $100,000 range there basically, but you know, the thing is that everyone always wants like a price prediction, but when it comes to like technical analysis and trading, it's not like a predictive mechanism. You can't predict price. You only have probabilities essentially. And you know, whatever price does at the end of the day is what price is going to do. So as long as the weekly and monthly trends remain to the upside, I'm just generally looking for more upside pressure. I think April is going to be a pretty damn good month for Bitcoin. Historically speaking, April in election years has always been a green month for Bitcoin. The second quarter, even more importantly, of election years has been like a pretty damn good green month, you know, typically returning between about 40 to 50% in the prior three times. So, you know, where does that put Bitcoin if it plays out within those statistics in the next 3 months? I mean, what, it's trading at $70,000 right now. So 40% on top of that is, I don't know, somewhere around 80, 90,000, or it's more like $90 to $100,000. So I actually do think that, you know, it's possible that we do see that, you know, sooner rather than later, perhaps. But, you know, going onwards and forwards from there, we have to get closer in time before I really have, you know, a better idea, at least myself, of, okay, does this have more juice or is this topping out? But for right now, still up, and this is a fresh breakout, basically. So to me, it's just, there's no real reason to be super concerned about price action as of right now. You know, even more to that point, man, because I know this is going to come up, right? You have the halving coming up this month, basically April, right? In a few weeks here. And one of the major things with that I think might be of value to the community here is that on the halving, something very important happens, right? The production gets halved, but more so the production cost to produce a Bitcoin, it's redundant, but gets doubled. And right now it's about 30,000. So that's going to go up to 60,000. Why is that relevant? Because we've never really seen, you know, consistent closures below that basement price for production cost. And that going up to $60,000 kind of tells me that, hey, if Bitcoin does have a downside move in the short term, you know, somewhere around there, maybe even a little bit below $60,000, that's fine as well. Probably going to be a major opportunity.
Because the supply reduction or like the decrease in new supply, I should say. Also, would you say this upward pressure is, you know, sort of building to an explosive breakout?
Would I say that this upwards pressure is building to an explosive breakout? Yeah, I mean, I think that we're right, generally going to see
next question.
I do have a question for you, though, here. Like when it comes to, because you've mentioned it a couple times, you're saying like it looks like some new volatility is coming in, that breakout, of course. What do you actually look for when you start to notice like a trend reversal? Because that's something that I think a lot of people, especially the audience, are trying to figure out if it's their first cycle.
Right.
What signs do you look at to say, okay, I think this is going to cool off. Maybe Bitcoin dominance shifts to alts. Maybe alts are going to cool off and it goes to dog coins. You know, so I guess I'm curious, like, what do you look for to say the market's slowing down?
So there's two things. So basically, if you're looking for more of a, like a predictive mechanism as to when things are maybe likely to top out, I think it's best to be paying attention to volatility indicators. So, you know, I use several different ones for that, but you know, you could use just like an HVP or a BBWP, something like that. It's completely fine. And you're looking for extremes.
HPW. Yeah.
Can we break those down? I will say our audience, they like to click the button, but they also like to try to figure out what buttons to click. So for an indicator standpoint, right, what does that mean?
HPWP.
Okay,
so...
okay. So
TD basically.
But that's exactly right, Nick. Yes.
Eric, was that your lady laughing in the background over the YouTube comments before?
Yes, that is the bird in the background. She is she's having a really good time. She's like Nick's biggest fan, by the way.
Oh,
she thinks he's hilarious. So
go.
Well, anyways,
we're out here trying to learn about like serious things here, Eric. This is
we're talking about the very serious sector of cryptocurrency, magic internet money right now. So my favorite volatility indicator is BBWP. It's just the Bollinger Band with percentiles. So it's just, you know, it's putting a percentile function on the Bollinger Band's width, which is a volatility indicator. So it gives you stats and volatility at the same time. Basically, the idea is that when that gets to extremes, like, you know, 95 percentile or more on higher term timeframes, like, you know, a 5-day weekly, especially for Bitcoin, that is usually around the time you're going to see major highs and major lows. You expect extreme volatility during those events. So they're not going to be perfect, but they're going to be, you know, pretty damn close to the ultimate high and the ultimate low, typically speaking. So that'd be the first sort of thing that I'd be looking for there. But realistically, go ahead.
Are you looking at those on like a weekly basis when you're looking at the charts associated with that? Or are you looking on more short
term? Yeah. So if we're talking about like a cycle high, then yes, it would have to be on like a weekly, because you know, you don't want to judge, you know, a cycle high on like an hourly chart, right? There's a million hours in one cycle, right? So it's not very useful. So a weekly is going to be a little more accurate within that regard. But that would be the first thing that I'd look for. When that starts to really get red, okay, then I'd start to be maybe a little bit more cautious. But realistically, and it's probably the most unsexy answer I can give you, is this. When you see the weekly trend reverse, when you see lower lows and lower highs, it's really just no more complicated than that. It's been a 100% perfect signal every time in Bitcoin's history ever for macro reversals, basically. What are you laughing at, by the way? Elsa's like dying in the background. How big is this Bollinger Band? These people are great.
our commenters are definitely undefeated. They've gotten me also before, but love to see that you and your significant other are appreciating the comments. That's always a good sign.
It's a good community.
Right, yeah, now, I'm actually curious because the BBWP is actually pretty hot. We're at 85%, which is not, you said 95% is what you're looking for. Before
when you start to get to 95 to 100 percentile, that's when, okay, this is like really fucking cooked up. Actually, I haven't checked it recently, but.
Oh, you're in for this. Share your screen.
I'm looking at it right now.
So I will give you, okay, let me just present it over here. All right. Nice.
You can share the screen and then Clemente can pull it up.
Yeah, I just want to share a window so I don't show like my hentai porn and shit like that. so this, I know I gave you the BBWP. That's a free public indicator. This is a private indicator. It's very special.
CHPDRB. How much for this one, huh?
Very private, but just for you, choose Rich, Nick. This one right now is at 44.5 percentile. So I'm not concerned about this at all. This is still very, 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 very low. I wouldn't say it's super low, but you know, it's getting towards breakout levels above 50 percentile. And then realistically, it's not till we get up towards, you know, 85, 95, 100 percentile, even on this one, where I'm
what
even
is this one called? HPV.
This one is
like a rash.
This is the herpaderp. Yeah, is the HPD DRV. This is just a private indicator, but I can bring up the BBWP as well. Let's see what it's got over here. I'm sure.
Yeah, I was just looking at it. It's at like 85 on the weekly, basically, is what you're looking at.
Yeah, about 85 percentile. So it's getting up there. Yeah. But, you know, for example, the last few highs here, these are 95 percentile. And these weren't like on the high. It was very close to the high. So, you know, once that starts to max out, it's like a warning signal. And then maybe like a few months away from there, okay, you know, we're probably looking at likely topping time. Or at least a cool off for a while. And during that cool off, we can decide, all right, does this maybe have another leg or is this a reversal time? But there will be time in between there to kind of really decide. So, you know, at the end of the day, man, it's all about trends. It's all about trends. I know that people like they want like the sexy answer. It's not, man. You know, it's not. Trends are the most important thing. And at the end of the day, when it reverses, you actually won't even know at the high. You're going to know at the next lower high, basically.
And you're talking about like at the end of the cycle or the top of the cycle is what you're
correct.
Talking about.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, so- exactly.
Okay, so if you had to if you had to make a bet, do you think that this cycle would be like shorter than usual, or is it just something that you couldn't make any prediction on because you're again just studying like weekly trends? But I'd love to know what you think. I'd love to know if you think the Ethereum ETF approval plays into it. Some people think that the Ethereum ETF is not going to get approved in May, but it will get approved in 2025. That could extend this cycle. I'd love to know your thoughts on that.
I think the Ethereum ETF narrative could be really, really strong, especially after seeing, you know, what happened with Bitcoin. I mean, who cares what it actually means for Ethereum? It's all about the perception, right? And with Bitcoin doing what it's done, I think that, you know, Ethereum even just being mentioned for an ETF is like, okay, you know, this is going to drag things on, you know, as you said, potentially until 2025, maybe even late 2025. I do think, okay, if I am going to give like an answer, you know, best guess, I do think that this market probably ends early 2025. The reason why I say that is because of the 18.6-year real estate market cycle, which has actually been correlated incredibly well with all markets, as it as all things kind of get dumped into land at the end of the day. And that one, which has been incredibly accurate for the last 100 years, is going to come into like the next sort of corrective period in 2026. But the thing is that real estate is usually the last one to top. So we would expect stock market slash crypto probably a little bit before that. So, you know, does this market cycle end up being, you know, more or less? It's probably going to be actually about on pace, maybe a little bit less. If I had to guess, you know, that probably gives a green light until the end of this year, and then maybe a little bit in 2025. And then if I'm thinking from like a timing perspective, yeah, okay, that might make sense. At the minimum, at that point, we're going to start to see real extremes on these indicators, like I was showing. And at least we're going to get, you know, some sort of major consolidation. Things will slow down for like, 1 to 3 months. And during that period, if we start to see the trends shift, if we start to see the daily trend shift, and then, you know, that leads in like the 2-day, 3-day, 5-day. Okay. You know, it's probably going to lead into the weekly, which is going to be the macro trend. And at that point, you know, just look out below. How far do things come down? I don't think that they're going to come down as far as what we've seen in the past. I think the days of like 70% retracements are kind of over.
Going lower than the previous all-time high, I would think, is out of the question, because that was the first last cycle.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It depends how high Bitcoin gets first, right? You know, if Bitcoin were to, let's just say, for example's sake, that Bitcoin got up to $300,000. I'm not saying it's going to get there. I don't think it gets there. But if that were to happen, it's like, that's going to massively shift how far down, you know, I think that it possibly could come. At that point, you know, I don't think it's coming anywhere near $70,000, maybe like $100,000 at most. But even that would be, you know, kind of too aggressive, in my opinion. Realistically, with these ETFs coming into the game, you know, they trade differently, right? They trade differently in big asset and money managers. They trade differently. And so, you know, Bitcoin likely, or already is for a lot of these guys, being stipulated into their portfolios, right? So if Bitcoin comes down, they're going to actually have to buy and support price, which is kind of crazy to think about. But, you know, what does that mean in terms of like actual drawdown? Instead of like 70%, maybe we get 50%, you know, 40 to 50%, something like that. But these are not ideas that I'm super married towards. It's just things that I've noticed in traditional markets when we've seen, you know, these sort of events occur.
Absolutely. Nick, it looked like maybe you had a question, or am I wrong? Okay. I was just
adjusting myself.
Okay. Yeah. Just checking. So I love it. So Eric, I mean, it's really hard to predict. I love what you said about the real estate market cycle. You also brought up that this is an election year, and you referenced Bitcoin's performance in previous election years. How important do you think the results of the election are going to be to Bitcoin's price and then the broader crypto market?
Oh man, that's a good question. Oh shit. Okay. So I was trading when Trump was elected, and I just remember the markets going up and up and up and up some more. And look, I'm not a political person. I don't like Trump. I don't like Biden. I think it's like absurd that these are the two best candidates out of a country of 330 million. It's insane. How does that happen? But I think if Trump gets elected, things go up massively. I think if Biden gets elected, you know, is he going to turn on the printers as well? I mean, probably.
Yeah, he is.
So at the end of the day, all roads lead to upside, right? It's hard to say, man. It's hard to say. I think both generally are gonna have upside in the first year at least, and then after that, things might get a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
Good. I have a quick question. So, how do you make money? Do you just make money off of trading?
Yeah. So I have my trading bots. So I have like these little bot slaves that trade for me in the background, and basically you just make strategies with them, and they do their thing. Sometimes they make money, sometimes they lose money, but at the end of the day, you know, it's consistency over time. So that's kind of what I'm optimized for there. Then I have my investing with, you know, a few cryptocurrencies, also in stock market as well. And then I also have my, you know, my business from YouTube, which has actually been nicer in the more recent times. Yeah. So for me, you know, having multiple streams is good, but mostly trading, and then investing is where I've kind of noticed the next sort of like major lane for myself, as there's, you know, as I learn more and more about wealth management and trying to actually like you know, maintain things rather than just make things.
I definitely understand the keeping it, you know, someone who's just incredibly wealthy, very rich, I should say. It is the maintenance mode is sort of where I'm at, where these children are playing with meme coins. I'm all about retention at this point in time, you know, retaining that wealth.
Retention, yes. I've heard a lot about this this theory. And in the background there, are those some sort of Mickey Mouse Disney?
Calling out the collectibles there. The
No. I love collectibles. I have Legos, man. It's great.
These are no, they're, you got a Bored Ape, you got, it's all super plastic stuff. I got it because I wanted to be inspired when we were in the NFT space, or we still are in the NFT space, but as part of having our business in the NFT space,
yeah, I'm feeling it.
Wanted to have some of it. Well, appreciate that. Yeah, that's it's also to explore which ones are actually quality and which aren't, because we were discussing, well, I don't want to give away what we're cooking. I mean, we're cooking up some big things here. Like, crazy shit. Ideas that people haven't even heard of before, if I'm being completely honest. You know, there's just, if someone said I'm proud of that collection, this collection is basically worthless. I don't understand the dynamics of these like art collectibles. I don't understand like who are the most of the buy? I guess I'm the buy. Everyone buying it is people all thinking about creating businesses in this space. And that's apparently is sufficient to generate like, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars a year in industry revenue for that subsector.
Yeah, minimum.
Yeah. We've explored that space and we're still working on it. That's what that's for.
And Crown, we just a couple more minutes with you. Yeah. Really appreciate your time. And so, you know, I don't think you participate in NFT still, right?
I mean, I look at them sometimes from time to time. Okay, I'll tell you what. So Elsa found this like, what was it? Like an otter or a seal or something? Or
sappy seals?
It was some sort of animal, and like she liked it, and they said that on the page that they saved the koalas. That's right. It was a koala. It was a koala or something. I don't even know, man.
Was it a marm? Like
years ago.
Years ago. Okay.
I don't know. This is back in the day.
And they were like promising to save the koalas if you buy their damn NFT. Turns out they didn't save any koalas.
Shocker.
But we bought the NFT anyway. So that's sitting somewhere in there. Look, I think NFTs are legit and it makes a lot of sense to me. I'm just not in the space. Like when it comes for me, when it comes to like investing, I really try to live by that rule. Like don't invest in shit that you don't actually understand. And for me, like I really don't understand a lot of these NFTs. I certainly understand the ones where like you get something like the access and, you know, you kind of use it as like a ticket or something. That makes a lot of sense to me. And it really seems to me like, you know, it will be the future in some ways. Just, you know, I haven't really gotten into it myself.
And do you touch meme coins at all?
Well, those I understand, Pio. So of course, look, in this cycle, this is the first time that like I've actually gotten into some shit coins. And look, I get it. It's fun. They do crazy things. They go up many percentages in a day and then they go down many percentages in a day. It's hilarious. And it's just, it's fun. It's kind of a fun thing to be, you know, to be a part of. You know, Doggy Coin, not too interesting to me, but man, I've seen some really, I saw this one. It's like this crazy dwarf coin. They've actually made a lot of videos of Nick at this point, and they have this amazing tune, man. It's a total, I don't know if it's a scam, because like they don't really say that they're doing anything, but
they just have an animation team. I know the one you're talking about, Balkiv.
Yeah,
dwarfs,
man,
or something
it's
like that.
Great.
Something absurd.
Yeah, that's
I
it.
Getting tagged in that thing.
And they're yeah. very about culture. Like whatever's happening in
right
the space,
on, yeah.
they have a video within seconds. It's like weirdly impressive how quickly they
Indeed.
Knock these things out.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So that's the one that I really like. Ordinals is actually something that I wanted to ask you guys about, because you guys are all about NFTs. What do you think? It's legit, or is this just it's legit? Okay.
In my opinion, it's legit. We've had some strong conversations about it, and I faded them at first. The argument is just like the fact of Bitcoin and it being inscribed truly on chain is like what really separates it. There's definitely a whole bunch of movement between like traditional NFTs, which the ordinal community calls like pointers, because they're not actually on chain. So a lot of people actually view the ordinal side of things as like not NFTs because everything's inscribed on a Satoshi. They theoretically they could live forever. Even if the world imploded, they would still be there. Like, so there's definitely a very strong culture for ordinals and a very diehard community that really separates them from like quote traditional NFTs.
I think it's
interesting.
I would actually venture to say it's potentially the best if you're actually just looking to
invest,
get like just get a long term, like the same way that you would buy a piece of art. That's the best way, in my opinion, to like sort of get ordinals is with that approach. Only because I don't like the fact that like you know people get into the environmental side of things, and it is kind of weird how we don't discuss it that often. But frankly, like you are trading on a proof of work chain, which is like just not from a programming standpoint, not the most efficient. But from the provenance standpoint, Bitcoin has the best blockchain from like a provenance standpoint, hands down. There's people where you look at like Solana, for example, people are like flipping them back and forth for like, you know, small gains. You just can't do the same thing on Bitcoin. And so it's kind of a built-in feature that's pretty nice about Bitcoin and to a degree Ethereum. We've been discussing how doing swaps and things like that on Ethereum can cost $100, just as bad as Bitcoin, or like it gets up there with Bitcoin. Bitcoin, the bigger thing is like that, however many hours it takes for the transaction to settle can be frustrating. But regardless, if there's one chain, which chain has the most provenance? Well, just Bitcoin. I mean, and it's also the most historic since it's the first sort of public blockchain that exists. So, yeah.
Yeah, Crown, in my opinion, NFTs are the riskiest vertical within crypto. They just are. I mean, you're literally talking about buying a picture on the blockchain, right? So, and it's not like a meme coin or a shit coin where you can buy $100 worth and then sell $150 worth after it goes up. It's a very illiquid asset and you have to find an individual buyer. On the Bitcoin side, I agree with what Nick and Easy said. I think that it probably will emerge as the number one chain for NFTs, but it's hard to figure out which ones are the right ones to buy. And sometimes you think like, oh, that's got a startup behind it and the founders are exceptional, but then the market favors like one that's by some anonymous founder or something for some other reason. So you have to really dive in whole hog. Nick?
It depends
on what your like approach is. There are people like flipping ordinals obviously right now, which does exist, but like you're somebody who is made of extraordinary wealth, and the reality is for someone like you, you know, you don't need to be out there flipping the day to day, even though I do know that you may flip meme coins once in a while. But I feel like with ordinals, I genuinely do like the approach of just buy and hold some of these ordinals, as weird as that is. Obviously, if something goes up an insane amount. We saw like the Bitcoin puppets, for example, go up 10x. It's hard. Like if you had a painting go up 10x and you could just flip it immediately, I feel like a lot of people would just be like, yeah, okay. Like that you're telling me in 2 weeks I make 10x. Like it's hard.
You have that same volatility on the other side. Like you could have bought a Node Monkey for 0.9 and they dropped all the way down back to 0.4. So like the NFT volatility, when you had even said like, Bitcoin may not have a 70% retracement again. Ordinals absolutely will. Like projects absolutely will. Cause it's like you're going to the farthest side of the risk curve when it comes to the underlying asset. And many people do look at it as like a leveraged bet on a lot of it. I saw an interesting post the other day, and I guess I'm kind of curious the whole panel's take was someone was like, if you have four puppets or one Bitcoin, what's like a bigger flex? Like that's kind of the thing is like NFTs and ordinals are really a cultural movement. Where it's like, you can say, I have these four things. It's still equal to one Bitcoin, but I have a picture that I can put in your face and be like, I have this and you don't. Versus someone who can go out and buy a Bitcoin, which is like an interesting dynamic.
It's an interesting dynamic, but then you look at like what happened to apes and then, you know, do I have one Ethereum? Do I, not that apes are worth one Ethereum, but do I have like 40 Ethereum or do I have one ape? I mean, it's cool when apes are at 250, but when they're down at two ETH, not at all. I would just add on the ordinals as well. Like one thing that really differentiates them from what we've seen in previous cycles is that it's way more technical, and the community absolutely love eating that part up. So for example, the recent mint that happened is the ink one, and everyone's talking about the legacy sats. And so you kind of have to dive in and be like, well, what are legacy sats? Why do people value them? And so I think like the technical, like not just looking at the picture and looking at the art, but looking at the technical side of why a community is really excited and why value is being assigned to it more than just like the team is good, the art is good, then lore is good, is something super fun over on Ordinal. So that's something that really differentiates it from the Ethereum or the Solana side.
I bought a punk for 95 Ethereum.
Okay.
I wish I had held the Ethereum, like if from a financial standpoint. That said, I wouldn't have had a punk hoodie and had a 1 week
viral fame.
Viral fame.
Right. I mean, that's worth a consideration, of course.
$100,000.
So it sounds like Ordinals kind of has like lore, basically. Like people fall in love with the story of it, essentially. And I don't know. To me, also, because Bitcoin's kind of been one of the major players in this current cycle, unlike last cycle, it felt like, in comparison at least, it seems to me that like Ordinals being on Bitcoin, I don't know, it makes more sense. You know, that sort of narrative could be maybe strong. I'm curious what you guys think on that regard.
Well, absolutely. And also there's not really a meme coin presence on Bitcoin in the same way that is for Ethereum and Solana. And yeah, maybe there will be, but when people buy dog whiff hat or bonk, they're kind of placing some sort of leveraged bet. It's like just a higher risk bet on the Solana ecosystem. And there actually, for a period of time, weren't a lot of options if you wanted to do that. Obviously, you could buy NFTs, but like, you know, a liquid meme coin kind of offers a different kind of exposure. I feel that we've seen some meme coins really emerge as like sort of majors within the meme coin ecosystem. People talk about Dog with Hat, Bonk, Mog, Pepe. You know, I can kind of list a few more. But do you agree with that? Do you feel that there's almost a certain level of escape velocity that's been reached by some of these meme coins?
Not yet. It'll happen, but not yet, man. I mean, of course, like it really is a game of musical chairs with these things. Like, I love that saying, you play stupid games and you win stupid prizes. And that's what's going to happen here. Some people are going to make out big, of course, but yeah, I mean, it hasn't reached it yet. I don't think that we've seen like true craziness in this market just yet. I mean, again, Bitcoin's just broken its prior all-time high. I think that these things, as crazy as it sounds, probably have more to go overall. There's going to be big ebbs and flows. As Clemente was saying, like these are highly, highly risky, which, you know, comes with big volatility in both ways. But, you know, generally, I don't think it's wise to be looking for tops on most things until Bitcoin has put in its own top. And, you know, we start to see this whole market turn around a bit. And I think that's just going to take a lot more time than what we're currently at.
So I agree with you. I also wanted to get your perspective. Like when you talk about that, you talk about like giving it some more time. I think about retail a lot because retail is involved with the new, you know, blow off top all time high every cycle. A lot of people were saying months ago that retail was going to come in at all time high. I actually tweeted a few times. I was like, I think they don't come in until over 100K. Do you feel, I mean, we're past all-time high right now, or we're at all-time high. It's happened. Do you think that retail is here? And if not, when do you think retail really kind of gets going?
Dude, I have proof that retail is not here, at least in the masses that we would expect. I mean, I can show you my YouTube analytics. I'll show you right now if you want to see.
Let's do it. We love that.
It's still in the gutter, man. Yeah, sure. Okay, let's pull up my chart right here.
Would you say that that's like a personal thing, or is that more indicative of the broader market?
I mean, it's personal and it is indicative of the broader market. I mean, if you bring up my screen right now, you can see in all past cycles, you can see the spikes.
Ooh, look at that guap, my Eric Crown. Guapping up over here on YouTube.
I'm
look
choosing
at that.
Rich, baby. Do you know how much 385,000 is over 6 years? Do the math.
It's still good.
I can't even live in New York at this point.
I'm broke. YouTube, okay, that's actually pretty freaking solid, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I'll take it. Of course, you know, I want to be, of course, like I am very grateful for it. But anyways, you know, Sorry. Almost had to stop myself there. Okay. Yes. You know, if we go back to 2019, I'm seeing about the same views on my channel then when my channel had, you know, 30,000 subscribers in as we are in current times. This big spike here that my cursor is currently on, that's
literal all-time high.
That's literal that was the prior all-time high, of course. Yes. And that is, you know, a 3x from what I'm getting right now. So, you know, to me, this is a signal that we're barely breaking out in views right now. So, you know, the uptrend's just begun in views. I think that this has more to go. I certainly don't think that we've seen like the masses of retail that people are, you know, really talking about when they mean retail. Like they're talking about the exuberant people who come in, who didn't really have an interest in this market at all. And all of a sudden, you know, they want to be buying X, Y, and Z. You always XRP, by the way. I don't know what it is, but they love always XRP. Yeah, man. Isn't that weird?
Cardano's the other one that they just love.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. For sure. But yeah, man, you know, for me, this is a pretty obvious sign that we're not there. We're not there. I've consulted with some of my other YouTube buddies and they're kind of the same thing too, man. It's not as low as mine, but there still is not at prior all-time highs. So, you know, I think there's no better indication than like, you know, YouTubers' views at the end of the day. So, yeah, to answer your question, no, I don't think that they're here. And I don't think that they come in. I mean, 70,000 new all-time highs is not exciting. Like, no, I guess no one really cares.
Literally.
It really
literally nobody like cares. Oh, it's $70,000 for one Bitcoin. It used to cost $500. I don't care.
Our
YouTube charts are completely botched because Pio made a video about steroids and athletes basically a couple of times. And so that's now the chart is just completely screwed.
It was during the bear market crown. I randomly made some viral videos about MMA that are throwing off our shit. But what you're saying is actually true. And if you look at our subscriber growth, minus the MMA stuff, it's absolutely spot on. Also, our Twitter spaces on the NFT side coincided with the all-time highs for NFT volumes also. So I think that that's a phenomenal indicator of retail. And then obviously there's the kind of qualitative indicators too, like when your friends text you about stuff, your friends that aren't anywhere near this space. So look, man, this was absolutely phenomenal. Loved having you on. Just before we wrap up, can you talk to us, what was it like making the walk for that boxing match? Are you going to compete again? Are you still training? What's going on?
Man, there are a lot of questions there. So making the walk, that fight was literally at like 1:30 a.m. I go to bed at 9 p.m., dude. So for me, it was like a sleepwalk. It took me a couple rounds to wake up. I barely had any training for the fight. I absolutely loved it, man. Look, boxing, if you're not getting paid for it and it's not your life, it's not your job, it's really dumb. It's really, really dumb. You know, you're just wasting your brain, but it's hilariously, incredibly fun. So I've still been training, still been, you know, doing all this stuff. I'll probably compete again, you know, whether it's in June or whether it's at the end of this year, I don't know, but I think I can afford one or two more times and then I'll have to put it to rest. But, it's like a drug, man. You shouldn't start. You shouldn't start because it's amazing. By the way, Pio, you'll appreciate this because I know that you like boxing. You know who was next to me today hitting the bags just randomly at my gym was was Dmitry Bivol, man. Just right next to me. Just smashing the bag. Incredible. Only in Dubai do you see this kind of shit. But yeah, man, I loved it. I'd love to do it again. But at the end of the day, you know, if you want to know some behind the scenes, you don't get paid for it. It's a huge commitment, you know, training every day, twice a day for 2 to 3 months beforehand. And realistically, I mean, in order to be good at boxing, you need like years of training. I mean, I really have a deep respect for these guys who are at a professional level who just, you know, they've dedicated their full life to this and they have such a mastery over everything that goes on in there. And I love it. Hope to be around it some more, but unfortunately it's going to be limited for me.
Well, if you want to bring kicks into it and get involved on the sort of Muay Thai side, or I guess we're calling it karate, we can introduce you to Karate Combat. And I don't want to speak on behalf of our partners at Karate Combat, but I think you could catch some kind of check. I think that that's possible. I don't think it'd be a freebie.
I'm in.
If you want to catch a check.
and take damage to other parts of your body than just your head, because I know your head's probably the most important thing. Nick, something out of here?
Our commenters would love to see that. A shirtless fight would be just right up the alley of our commenters. I'll just say that much, because it was very clear. Yeah,
let's all get naked right now.
Yeah, we were hanging out with BitBoy yesterday, and listening to him talk about the karate combat stuff was pretty damn interesting. I mean, look, making the walk, I have a tremendous amount of respect. It's awesome to hear that you're still competing. What are you weighing in at right now, Crown?
Right now, maybe like 175, 176.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, be somewhere around here.
I thought you were going to say like 200. That's what I thought you were going to say. Looking thick, Crown.
I'm very short. Very, very short. 5'8", so... 5'8" on a good day, Mount. So yeah, it's lower weight. Can go up though, but all good.
Short kings. I love it. I love it. Anyway, thank you so much for joining. Where can people find you? Obviously, your YouTube channel, your Twitter, anywhere else we should send people?
Nah, just YouTube and Twitter. I'm most active on YouTube, of course, Eric Crown Crypto. If you're interested in daily Bitcoin analysis, just that TA astrology for men is what we're all about there. And yeah, man, I just want to say thanks for having me on. It's been an absolute pleasure. Really enjoy speaking with everyone here. Like I said, I've been a secret admirer of this show for a long time, so it's cool as hell for me to be here. So thank you.
Thanks so much, man. Well, look, make sure you give Crown a follow on Twitter and on YouTube. Huge YouTube following, just absolutely crushing it on YouTube. Not an easy thing to do. So you know he's doing something right. Really enjoyed having you on today and hope to have you on again in the future. And going to keep our eyes peeled for any martial arts bouts coming out, whether boxing or karate.
Absolutely, man. Have a good one, guys. All
you
the best.
Too. See you later, man. Ladies and gentlemen, make sure you give Eric Crown a follow at Eric Crown Crypto. What a great episode of the show. What a great way to close out the week here. Friday, March 29th. If it's your first time listening, we do the show Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern time, each and every week. Show is available on Apple and Spotify podcasts if you want to listen to the show on the go, or if you want to share it with people outside of the Twitter bubble. Also available on YouTube if you want the video feed, X platform video as well. Anywhere you consume your content, we're there, whether it's Twitter Spaces or the video feed. We'll be back next week. One more monster shout out to Eric Crown Crypto for a great performance today on the show. Appreciate everybody listening. We will catch you back on Monday. Choose rich, everybody. Catch you next time.